Hello and welcome to the Majlis Ready for European Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for European Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. Kyrgyzstan is soon headed to parliamentary elections in which candidates from dozens of political parties are competing. Elections in Kyrgyzstan are always a colorful event, and unlike the ones held in the neighboring countries, they are often competitive and unpredictable. But this time, things are little unusual, given various controversies involving crackdown against the opposition parties, the election commissioner's rule, and a spike in rumors about vote buying. On top of all, Kyrgyzstan is going through tough economic times, given the severe decrease in the remittances by its migrant workers in Russia and elsewhere due to the pandemic. And also, pandemic must be a factor the way things are happening in the country. So we have a lot to talk about. To discuss all these, I'm joined by three special guests from Kyrgyzstan: Gulnora Turaliba, who's running for the parliament from the Birbol party and was the spokesperson for former Prime Minister Isakov, who is now in detention. We are also joined by Dr. Medet Toliganov, assistant professor at the Department of International and Comparative Politics at the American University of Central Asia, Dr. Sania Toktogazeva, an expert in constitutional law, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, the Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi, is joining us from Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for being with us today. So let's start with you, Gulnora. How's the campaigning going?
Campaigning is very intensive and takes a lot of time. And there are a lot of discoveries for me as a person who is running the first time for the parliament. Mm-hmm. So, that's how it's going.
Tell us about your discoveries, Gulnara. What kind of discoveries are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm actually now visiting different villages in Issyk-Kul and around Bishkek. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised that I couldn't find people to help me to make this campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people who would do leafleting with me or anything, because all the people they start to work for the other parties long time ago. And actually, it was tough even to find anyone to help me. Wow. In these regions. And the other discovery was that I'm trying actually to visit homes, and I'm also leafleting like in the streets. And the problem was that while I was visiting some streets, I met some very aggressive people also. They were saying like this street is going to vote for some candidate who like built something like football field for kids, or on another street there were people who did some other stuff like helping with some logistics and electricity or something, that the people, they really have candidates who have done some infrastructure for them, and they're going to vote for these people. And that the other discovery was that still people believe in some unbelievable facts that, for example, the pens they will use during voting, that their ink can disappear at some point. Their voting sheets can actually be filled by other people after elections. So, some candidates even distributed some pens, just ordinary ones, saying that this ink doesn't disappear, but but only this ink like will be counted when they will fill their voting ballots. So some really interesting stories candidates tell the people, so, and they believe in all this stuff.
Interesting. So let me bring you in, Medet, here. So what Gulnora is saying, kind of very interesting to listen to. Is it something of unusual in Kyrgyzstan during the election times? Especially what attracted me in Gulnora's comments are like the streets are kind of dominated by one group and not letting members from the other parties to come in and campaign and things like that. Is it normal? Is it unusual? I mean, let me put it in this way. Is there anything in this election so far you have witnessed which is unusual compared to the previous ones?
To a large extent, I think this election is somewhat similar to the previous cycle, which was in 2015, although there is a difference, of course. And maybe this election look like more even maybe the elections of 2010 because of its unpredictability and because of the diffusion of the center of power, because usually we have so-called power parties or one power party, and then so-called opposition who are aligning themselves or running individually, but the position is opposing these four power parties. But this time we have a bit of an unusual situation when we don't have a clear one four power party. We have two so-called alleged, or maybe two plus one or two as a satellite parties, and therefore there is a certain diffusion within the center of the so-called pro-power group. So, and that also maybe intensifies competition. And maybe that also speaks to what Gulnur is also describing, intensity of competition on the ground as well. Because it happens not only between pro-power parties and opposition parties, but also among pro-power parties themselves, because they're also fighting among their own constituency, which quite often could be the same group of people. And that maybe makes these elections a bit interesting, maybe unusual than some other elections.
Very, very interesting. Also, Sanya, other than what Medet and Gulnora told us about kind of unusualities, kind of differences, and this time, the fact that we are having these elections during the pandemic, how it is factoring in the way the campaignings are taking place or the election rallies are happening in the country?
I would like to add several points as to, in my opinion, to what extent these elections are different, except for the fact that they're being held at the context of pandemic. I think current elections are pretty much very different from previous ones. First and foremost, the interesting fact is that the party with the most seats in the current parliament, which is the Social Democratic Party, is not really contesting for the election, which is also very interesting. And it's an addition to what Medet Tülyganov have already said. Another interesting fact is that evident headliners, the Mekenim Kyrgyzstan, is the party of not the incumbent president, which is also, I think, important fact that we need to highlight. And we also, what we see in current elections is the massive rebranding happening in most of the parties with what they call the new faces and relatively younger candidates. And I think this rebranding was one of the key campaign tools that has been used by majority of the parties. Another interesting fact, I think we're experiencing the rise of completely new parties with huge inclinations towards populism, to a certain extent even radical populism. And another interesting fact is that we are currently having highly contested issues that are being discussed at Central Election Commission. And most of the times the decisions of the Central Election Commission are not being really predictable. Sometimes they're even shocking. And I think another interesting fact is that what we can see is that the number of candidates with ties with organized crime groups and different political parties actually have skyrocketed, which, in my opinion, creates serious concerns if government is really getting merged with criminals and organized crimes, and to what extent actually outcome or the parliament is going to have close ties with the organized crime groups. So these are, I think, the highlights that, in my opinion, makes these elections a bit different from previous ones.
Very interesting. Maybe I will ask the pandemic-related question later to Gulnara. Just to follow up, Sanya, though, I mean, why are we seeing this, all these unusualities, like in terms of the branding, in terms of young candidates joining in terms of lots of parties competing against each other? And in the last part of your comment, you also said a large number of people apparently connected to criminal groups are also competing in the election. Why are we seeing all these developments in this one election?
I think in terms of rebranding, it's actually the need of the time. Probably there is actually a moment where we need the new faces, relatively younger candidates, and it also shows that for this entire period of 30 years, we see that the old politicians have literally not fulfilled all the promises that they have made. And probably the political parties are also feeling that there is a need to give a certain hope for the electors to see in those new faces and relatively younger candidates. As for these organized crimes, at least for me, this is really worrisome. And another thing is that the law enforcement officials are not reacting to that. It means they are so entangled in those formalities, legalism. But in fact, everyone knows to what extent those people have the connections with the organized crimes. And the fact that the law enforcement officials are not reacting to that, including the president of Kyrgyzstan, it means that perhaps they themselves are connected with those organized crimes. And I think this is another very worrisome sign of the fact that the current incumbent regime either is not willing to do anything about it, or they're probably their hands are tied on this particular issue.
Rusa, let me bring you in here. I mean, also, speakers, please don't wait for me to invite you into the discussions. Whenever you want to say something, want to add something, inject something, please jump in without me inviting you. So, Bruce, in terms of these unusualities that we spoke about, anything to add into this? And also, speaking of unusual stuff, there was a strange discussion about something called Forum 2. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Forum number 2, I mean, that's been one of the most controversial things since even before the campaigning started. It's understandable to some extent. It's meant to deal with internal migration, labor migration within the country, so that someone who's residing in one place is able to vote in, I think it reads, as the most convenient place for them to cast their ballot, which means you have to go and register at whatever district and polling station is close to you. And the problem with that is that, you know, since you can move all over the country, in theory, of course, you could take a district where a party already knows that they have the vast majority of votes, and they can get people, and as the story goes, promise to give them money and transportation to the polling station and back on election day. And they want them to register in a place where they're not doing so well or need a few more votes or something like that. And there's going to be like 450,000 people voting under Forum number 2 just within Kyrgyzstan. There's also 30,000 more that'll do it outside Kyrgyzstan. Wow. But, you know, it's troubling because RFARL's Kyrgyz service, Aza Tik, has reported several people that said they were approached and told that this was the deal and said, you know, we're going to take you to this one school and that's where we want you to register to vote, and we'll give you 1,000 some now and 1,000 after the election, or even more in some places, you know. So election officials have admitted that they don't keep real good track of all the people that are involved on this. So like I said, 450,000 people are going to vote that way. There's been a spike in the number of people that are going to vote that way, actually. I think that's like 13% of the electorate or something that's going to vote that way. So it's raised some questions about, you know, how they use Form 2. I mean, it's got a legitimate purpose. But there's a lot of accusations that it's being abused right now and used to what we would call gerrymandering in America. I'm trying to shift the number of votes your party is going to get into a district where you're not doing so well.
Gulnora, your thoughts on this? I mean, I'm just wondering where the necessity comes from to create something like this. I mean, it looks like something unusual compared to the previous elections. So,
yeah, I would agree with Bruce that it's an unprecedented number of people still registering with Form 2. And I think that it one of the signs that votes are sold already, because most of the people, they need their passport and their application to change the polling station. So they will not do it actually for free. Yeah. So there is some help from parties to register them. And of course, they will not spend their time to go and to do all this bureaucratic hassle, yeah, just to vote. And actually, they have their polling station, so why should they change? And the other reason and sign maybe also is that I think that it's tough competition within the list of the candidates within the parties. So it looks like there are a lot of requirements within party to get the certain number of votes for candidates, and then it's kind of a condition for them then to become a member of parliament. So, for example, if you are in charge of polling station or several or dozens of polling stations, and your requirement is to get like 5,000 votes from those and didn't make it, then most probably the leadership of the party, they will not let you to become member of parliament. And it's actually not unusual, because it was practiced during the many elections before. And they even had some letters to sign that if they will not get a certain number of votes, that they will refuse of the place in the parliament. something like this.
Very interesting. Medet, we discussed lots of things since you spoke. So feel free to add anything you would like to into the opinions expressed earlier. And also, in terms of this forum number two, I'm kind of stuck here. Is there any political calculation behind this?
Do you mean the reason behind the usage?
Yeah.
I think it's partially, Gulnur does explain because it's a way how the campaign is managed, because our electoral system is a closed party list system. So basically, voters are coming and voting for parties, but party management during campaigns, they organize campaigns in such a way that candidates are assigned precincts, and then they have to get votes with the precincts. And they do it in various ways, and they do it also by using this form number two, by trying to bring as much as possible loyal voters from other regions, so from other precincts, to get registered in that specific precincts. And that's the way for them to gain individually for them, for internal party reporting purposes, as Gunnar was saying, and that's for them a condition to remain on the party list after, in case party wins, after the elections, and then to become an MP. And that's somehow, yes, it's a long time phenomenon, but maybe it's intensified relatively recently, because since 2015, when biometric registration was introduced and votes started to be calculated relatively properly, there were less issues with the voter registry and et cetera, et cetera. So that's when voters started to matter and the vote buying became more intense. It used to be before, but at that time it became more intense because parties and candidates started to work with voters. And I think that's also a byproduct of a general phenomenon of vote buying, and which also in turn become more important because, well, the good silver lining of that is voters started to matter. And of course, it turns to go in this awkward format that, well, it turns to be vote buying, including by using this form number two.
Interesting.
To bring as much possible voters loyal to you personally, to your own precincts.
Yeah. Medet, just to follow up on that, so how is it going to factor in the outcome of election? I mean, is it also apparently favoring some political parties than the others? I mean, who's benefiting from this?
I think it's a party with financial resources, first of all, can benefit from that, because vote buying in itself is quite expensive exercise. And other parties who have a lot of cash in hand, they can do that. So hence this system and this practice is favoring parties with rich candidates and with a lot of money for their campaign.
Very interesting. Sani, I mean, as a legal expert, talking about the form number two, its legitimacy and the reasoning that which was brought in, and is it even a legal thing?
Basically, currently, the three political parties, BDMD Kyrgyzstan and MKNM Kyrgyzstan, the rumor has it that they're somehow involved in registering people by Form 2. However, any attempts to kind of reveal it by the fact, for instance, I think some of the agitators from the Republic Party tried to do it, but he has been attacked, right? And there's a lot of pressure happening on them. So because, of course, it is not illegal if this registration is happening by the political parties and not actually happening voluntarily by the electors. But then there is a need so that someone would start a complaint, apply to the court, or write a formal complaint to the Central Election Commission. And this is what president is always highlighting, like, give me the facts and we will start it. But once the agitators of the other parties are trying to provide these facts, we see a lot of pressure, even the use of force that is happening against them. And here, I think the leading role is also played by the Central Election Commission. But the Central Election Commission, if we analyze their decision-making from the beginning up today, we see that they have very selective decision-making. There is also the strong power dynamics happening within the Central Election Commission. So those members who have been appointed by the opposition parties are prone actually to speak up, to make the work of the commission transparent, and to make the work of the commission more like fair. However, majority of them, unfortunately, they still prone to make the decision in favor of the pro-governmental parties. So interesting decisions have been made with respect to Bütün Kyrgyzstan, for instance, or the party itself, Kyrgyzstan. like even today, like an hour ago, what they did is that they have excluded from the a list of candidates the representatives from Birimdik and Mekenim Kyrgyzstan. This was done because of this conflict that took place on September 20 in Aravan. Mm. There was this massive conflict between the supporters of these two political parties. And I think the way why and the decision was, I think, unanimous. This also an interesting decision in this context, because in a way, law enforcement officials, they were silent completely about it. Like they opened this investigations, but not, they haven't qualified as the political conflict or the conflict related to the elections. But Central Election Commission stood up and said, okay, we need to do something. It is not acceptable. So they have disqualified these two representatives. Mm. But I think the decision was driven by the fact that they had no choice but to do that, because it became so evident. The video became so viral, and under this pressure, we see that Central Election Commission tend to provide some selective decision makings, also taking into consideration the general mood and the context, which in this case, I think, is also a little bit of positive things that are happening in Kyrgyzstan.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you very much. So how the alliances are being formed, who are running on what slogans, and how do you see the developments in the remaining couple of days and going forward? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Gulnora Turaliba, who's running for the parliament from the Birbol party. We are also joined by Dr. Medet Tolganov, assistant professor at the Department of International and Comparative Politics at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Dr. Sania Tokhtugazieva, an expert in constitutional law, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awozi, is joining us from Prague. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the upcoming elections in Kyrgyzstan. So let me start with you, Bruce, here. Though you are in Prague, but you are closely following what's going on in Kyrgyzstan in terms of the elections. So what are the main issues, what the parties are talking about, candidates are talking about?
Well, I mean, they're always going to make the promises as far as the campaigning. You know, I was out there last time all over the place doing it, and every rally you go to, they're making promises. I mean, I think the big issues that are going on are the ones we've been talking about. You know, how deeply involved is organized crime in this election? You know, how many of these votes are being bought off? You know, and there's all kinds of questions about legitimacy, you know, of the next parliament, given the doubts and, you know, and concerns people have about what I just said. You know, what kind of parliament are we going to end up with here? I mean, some people have already just come out and said that this parliament will be even worse than the one that's sitting in the Jogurku Kanesh right now. You know, I think that's what most people are watching. And, you know, the unfortunate thing about that is it kind of opens the door for popular unrest along the way. You know, if all of a sudden people think that the parliament's been taken over by, I'll say, special interest groups, you know, then you can see where people will be real unhappy, if not immediately as time passes and if things don't get better. They'll start to question the ability and credentials of some of the people who ended up getting seats in parliament. There's a lot of other issues, too, that go on. It's typical in Kyrgyzstan, too. Have all the parties got the right quota of women, for instance, you know, and national minorities, you know, and things like that? So it's one of the things that always makes Kyrgyzstan interesting to watch, is because there really is a lot of issues on the table all the time. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of the campaigning becomes the story. You know, I mean, people are, like I said, people are promising different things to different communities. You know, Gulnora was talking about that too, that, you know, in some neighborhoods, they said, we're voting for this party because they promised, or somebody in the party has already done, you know, but that seems to get placed second fiddle, so to speak, to issues of what are the allegations of what parties are doing. You know, what's this candidate doing that's not right, or this candidate. I mean, we've already seen the Speaker of Parliament was running from a party, and he gave a kind of a suspicious donation to somebody who had had a baby, and it was and named the baby after him, and so he decided he would give her 50,000 some, I think. But he was a candidate, and they said, well, you're buying votes. So that was a big scandal. So there's all these things that are always happening all the time that take at least as much attention, like I said, as the actual programs and platforms of the parties.
I wanted your opinion on that. I mean, in terms of the plans and programs and issues that parties are running on in this election, is there anything unusual? Is there anything strange? Is there anything different compared to the past? I mean, there are lots of issues the country is facing these days.
Yeah, I would agree with Bruce that there's not so much of a difference. And these elections, we're seeing a similar picture that programs maybe do not matter much. Mm. And as it was in 2015, number of voting observer organizations now doing this, whatever they call the electoral compasses, and trying to see how the program statements are matched with some surveys done among candidates themselves. And I would suspect the result will be quite a big variance. Sometimes maybe the candidates within the same parties would not necessarily agree with each other on what they are thinking the party program is. So in that sense, I think it speaks to quite a number of points made in electoral observations in the last elections as well, that while there are certain progresses in certain areas in our elections, but one thing is lacking progress altogether at all, it's substantive policy deliberations. So where the parties, if they will come to the parliament, they want to move the country towards, and on specific policy issues. Because in general, sometimes you can see the division, say it's old elite versus new elite. And that's sometimes how the composition and voter orientation is being moved by campaign by some parties. Sometimes, and especially in this election, maybe the party, let's say, Mekin in Kyrgyzstan was used quite frequently. And there is alleged presence of a quite wealthy person who made multi-millions of dollars by illegal tax schemes and et cetera, while working in tax inspection a long time ago. And quite often debate comes, are you aligned with that person or not? And therefore, it's quite often can be looked like as an issue on corruption. But it's not necessarily the issue on corruption, how to deal with corruption in terms of policy design, but rather how you relate certain politicians, group of politicians and parties to the specific person who is viewed to be part of these corruption schemes, and etc. I think these kind of things sometimes make certain shifts and the splits, and sometimes guide maybe voters, especially those who are undecided, those who can and should and let's say want to go and honestly put the and cast the ballot. Because in the rest of the issues, well, there could be certain slight variations. This party is a bit more nationalistic in their rhetoric. This one's are more liberal. This one's maybe heavily leans towards Russia. Others may be neutral on that. And you can see bits of different things, which maybe makes parties distinct in the eyes of the voters, but still largely maybe it's not necessarily program-based. It's somehow maybe based by the image of various people who ended up in the party lists, and somehow that maybe guides voters how they perceive parties and how they will vote.
And also, when looking from the from 10,000 feet above, it looks like there are, you know, there are so many parties competing in this election, but they are generally divided between two groups, pro-government or opposition. Is it the way it is on the ground?
Generally, it is, maybe, because it's a usual game. Since all times started from archive, that's what we're usually used to. And then somehow maybe all parties who enter also trying to show that we're for power, we're for pro-government, and we have our own constituency. But those who are against, they're also trying to build on that image as parties who are opposition or standing against the government or pro-governmental parties. But again, as has been mentioned earlier by Sanya, that's we have somehow refreshment of people's faces, and some parties try to rebrand themselves. And the picture is becoming a bit more confusing. Let's say this old main party, but with, let's say, with new faces.
Maybe Gulnara, is there any way, or maybe Sanya, you could take this question, Gulnara being a party here, is there any way to differentiate pro-government or opposition parties the way they are campaigning?
I think definitely yes, because especially if you look at the programs, I think almost all parties except for a few, which is like BDMD, Kyrgyzstan, and to a certain extent Mekinim Kyrgyzstan as well, the rest they want to, at a certain level, kind of this radical change or partially radical. For instance, some parties want to decrease the number of deputies. The others, they want to introduce something called like People's Assembly, народный курултай. Mm. Others would like to ask, like, what form of government do we need? Республика is, for instance, proposing to completely get rid of the Institute of Presidents. So, which means all these callings are essentially about conducting a constitutional referendum. As for, let's say, and it is evident from Birimdik and Kyrgyzstan, is that there is nothing about it in their programs, which for me, for as a reasonable reader, would assume that they are quite satisfied with current status quo. Mm. So definitely, maybe we can say that in this context, they are pro-governmental. But I think the one way or the other, if, for instance, Mekonim Kyrgyzstan would end up getting the more seats, anyway, they're going to initiate constitutional referendum, because one of the key, like, headliners of their program is that they want to decrease the number of deputies by half. Mm. For me, like, personally, I think this is really dangerous thing to do, given this political current context, to start the constitutional reform again, because this, in a way, could for lead us back towards maybe again going back to the presidential form of government. And another, I think, the very important thing that can clearly distinguish, like, pro-governmental or other parties, is that in pro-governmental parties, especially Birimdik and Kyrgyzstan, they talk a lot about Eurasianism, but God knows what does it mean in their programs. But generally, if you read it carefully, it seems like they're really for the strengthening of the further integration within the Eurasian Economic Union. So this also creates a little bit of worrisome signs, given the circumstances, what is happening in Eurasian Economic Union, particularly this five-year strategic plan that they have introduced, that have been constantly criticized by Kazakhstan, Kasym-Jomart Tokayev, that this particular strategy is actually threatening the very sovereignty of Kazakhstan.
Gulnora, where your party stands in these issues, especially the in terms of the constitutional changes that Sunny was talking about, and also about the authorities of the office of the president, and maybe, I don't know, what does this Eurasianism mean, as Sunny was talking about, where your party stands on in all these issues?
Yeah, as Sonia already told, we are one of the rebranded parties, and we brought absolutely new people who were not in politics before, and mostly entrepreneurs and representatives of small and medium business, and teachers, experts, consultants, and we have renewed the list by 97%.
Right.
Also answering on your question about these new faces on young leaders after the huge crisis related to pandemic in Kyrgyzstan. During that times, only these young groups of volunteers demonstrated courage, and they worked hard to help people. And we actually didn't see any people from authorities helping, and it was really a bad managed crisis. So I think this also pandemic affects that people demand for young people
to join in. And your party is tapping into this demand. Okay, so about the constitutional change, are you in favor of constitutional change? Are you in favor of, let's say, limiting the power of the presidency? What's your position on that?
Yeah, actually, we are not saying about getting rid of Institute of the President and also for cutting the number of the members of parliament. But we need to go for radical reform on preferential voting. This is what is in our program. So, and it will take, actually, it will be a huge step. And other programs, it's more related to boosting economy and education and healthcare issues. So we are not saying radical, but I think that it's more about populism, cutting number of member of parliaments, and it also is a threat for democracy, actually. And as for them getting rid of the Institute of President, I personally for that, but I know that it will not happen so quickly as other parties promise. So we are trying to get some real grounds while also forming the program and developing the program.
Right, yeah, forming programs and developing in alliances. Bruce, we were earlier talking about it was kind of interesting to see supporters of apparently two government-allied parties were fighting against each other, I guess, yesterday, somewhere in the southern Kyrgyzstan. And alliances seems to be on shaky grounds in Kyrgyzstan as they are headed to the elections.
Well, that was a couple of days ago.
A couple of days, okay.
You know, I suppose the simple answer is that there are no alliances during campaigning season. You know, everyone's out to get as much votes as they possibly can. That was my first thought. When I saw, you know, they said there was a fight between members of two different parties, and when I saw it was Mekanim Kyrgyzstan and Birim Dik, I thought they're both pro-government, aren't they? So I suppose it's not shocking at this point. You know, it will be interesting, since it looks like both those parties will get seats in parliament, how they cooperate once they get into parliament in trying to form some kind of coalition. Like I said, it was an isolated incident in one district. It might not make any difference.
Yeah. Out of respect for your time, I think we also need to be concluding the discussion. I have a number of other points to be discussed otherwise. I guess we touched upon it. I mean, we could be exploring the allegations about the vote buying or maybe the use of administrative resources. I mean, that has been always the case in Kyrgyzstan whenever elections happened. I mean, Medet, is there anything really striking out this time around in terms of use of administrative resources in favor of this or the other party in terms of vote buying? I mean, these are not new in Kyrgyz elections, but is there anything really striking out this time?
Yeah, I think maybe not very much radically different. Again, the same picture of using administrative resources, again, by pro-governmental parties. Maybe this time, again, because we see this duality of pro-governmental parties, one is more keen to use administrative resources, like the other is using maybe more financial resources, although I think both have access with relative maybe difference to both of these resources. And then, of course, this resource is not necessarily unique only to these two, because some other parties may also have access to administrative resources within the representations of central government somewhere in the region, so maybe within the local government. So this access to administrative resources also varies. And maybe, as it was pointed out also earlier, that we don't have this any longer central, this Social Democratic Party, and one clear center. In that sense, we see maybe decentralization of access to administrative resources, but still with a heavy usage by, let's say, few, like Birimdik, for example. So in that sense, being used, and there are some reports which are emerging and stories around that, how it's being used. And maybe these elections will show that we haven't made much progress on that. Because when it comes to counting whether these elections helped us generally to improve our electoral system process in general, maybe these administrative resources and vote buying, these two things will remain as something hasn't changed since the last elections.
Interesting. Okay, I think we need to wrap up the discussion. Maybe just the last question from each of you, if you can respond briefly. So, given all these developments, all these problems, challenges, and alliances, any predictions as to what kind of parliament we are going to end up with? Let's start with you, Sanya.
We have this common discussion among ordinary people that everyone is so worried that this coming parliament would be worse than the existing one.
In which way?
And I think if they continue successfully using the financial resources and administrative resources, this is what is going to happen. The only hope is that Birim Dik and Mekanim Kyrgyzstan, before the election day, would really maybe kind of the conflict between them escalate, because in any way it can create certain level of competition. But after this event that took place in September 20, it seems like both parties have said that they don't have any allegations to each other. So I think they themselves understand that for them to get there, to form the coalition, it's better to go together. And then it would be very difficult, I think, for the opposition, even if they manage to get to the parliament, to do anything about it. Because in any case, both of these parties plus the Kyrgyzstan are going to get the majority. They would be forming the government. And I guess it would be the continuation of the current status quo with terrible cadre politics and et cetera. So in a way, my predictions is very negative. I don't expect any changes that are going to happen. Probably the worries of the people that this parliament will be worse than this one is true in that sense.
Okay, Gulnora, what is your prediction? I mean, what kind of parliament are we going to get in terms of the seat allotments, in terms of the way it's going to shape the future parliament?
I'm not really an objective person now, but I'm trying. I guess that if there will be a real chance for oppositional parties to come to the parliament, then we will have more quality people there. So it's just my hope that there will be more people from different parties, oppositional ones, coming there and then build some kind of coalition with each other and start doing real reforms.
Okay. Medet, your thoughts on that? I mean, first of all, what kind of parliament you expect to see after the election day? And also, what are the indicators you will be looking at to see how it's going to turn out in the election day?
I would suspect that maybe between 5 and 7 parties will be ending up in the parliament. Of course, there are 2 or 3 which are relatively more or less known who them will be. The question will be maybe the 4th, 5th, and maybe 6th or whatever, maybe even 7th, but maybe fewer than that in terms of names of these parties. But the question comes, maybe these parties are now heatedly running for these seats, and the next 5 years will be something a bit different and maybe difficult times. First, maybe even if the opposition parties will not end up in the parliament, I think, and I hope at least, that it will shape somehow else a non-systemic opposition within the within our country, in the sense that the parliament's accountability and responsibility for shaping proper governance system, because elections should end up with effect on governance, which we have in a terrible shape nowadays in Kyrgyzstan. And we're having a lot of problematic years ahead to paying back our debt, interest, the main loan as well, to China, to others, and etc. And so we're having also a weak presidency, and then we're heading towards the presidential election of 2003, and that will also oversee somehow by the parliament as well. And a lot of maybe troublesome issues are in front of those who will be elected on October 4th. So in that sense, well, I expect a certain number of parties, but the question is that to what extent they will be up as a challenge to not just to have a senior coup that's sitting just occupying the seats of MPs, but having and trying to create a decent working cabinet of ministers and trying to put back in shape our governance system.
Right. Okay. Finally, Bruce, your thoughts on the same question, and then we will conclude the discussion right there.
Well, I agree. I mean, I can't see more than 7 parties. And really, the three, it's pretty obvious that Birim Dik, Bekenim Kyrgyzstan, and the Kyrgyzstan party are going to get seats in that, in parliament. And probably the majority of it will be in, will go to those three. They'll probably have, I don't know, 70 seats or something, at least 80 maybe. So you get a few other parties in there, but it's not a good formula for change. And let's face it, you know, I mean, Medet hinted about some of the problems Kyrgyzstan has. You need some creative thinking here to get out of some of this stuff. And, you know, packing it with a bunch of people who are pro-government candidates, a time when the government was really struggled to keep up with things, doesn't seem to be in the best interest of the people. And then, of course, there's going to be a legitimacy problem. Like I said, was this the will of the people, or was this all done because of money? You know, is that how these people got into parliament? And if parliament fails to implement any meaningful reforms and bring the country forward, people are going to think more and more about what the qualifications were of these people to begin with.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much, Bruce. So I will leave the discussion about what comes next after the election to another public event that we are organizing in partnership with the Carnegie Endowment on October 8th. So we will be discussing that, and we will be analyzing the outcome of the election and what it means to Kyrgyzstan. So with that, unfortunately, here we have to conclude the conversation. Thank you very much, Gulnora Toraliba, who's running for the parliament from the Birbol party, Dr. Medet Tolganov, assistant professor at the Department of International Comparative Politics at the American University of Central Asia, Dr. Sania Toktogazieva, an expert in constitutional law, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.